You are listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network. OneOfUs.net and all of the shows on it are 100% subscriber supported. Please consider becoming a subscriber to OneOfUs.net. Keep the site and all of our great shows going and get some terrific bonus content as well.
Time for the infestation here on One of Us. Woo! Man, if you guys have been seeing the social media stuff we've been doing for TIFF, we have just been pumping out content consistently. And I gotta thank my man here, the dude who's on top of it all, Shaq. How you doing, buddy?
I'm good. I'm fucking exhausted, but I'm good.
Man, no, you, again, I gotta praise you, man. You worked on top of this stuff. And it's been really, really fun covering this, covering all these movies. But now,
it's fun. I just like going to watch the movies. Like, that's what I'm here for. And so anything to help the site. I love the site. I love the festival. This year I went way harder at it than I usually do. Cause usually I only go, the festival runs about 11 days and mainly the first 10 are just like, that's when they're premiering stuff and all that stuff. But usually I just do like the opening weekend. So maybe like the first like 4 or 5 days tops. But this year I went for 10 out of 11 days and fatigue hits quick when you run on like no sleep.
Yeah, no, I told you, man, next year if I can save up some more money, I will go with you and I'll support you with this because I felt so bad. I would have tried to get this summer, but schools don't pay you during the summer, so
dude,
I had no money to back
it's
up.
No big trust.
Yeah, no, but also because it sounds like so much fun to go to these kind of fests, you know? It's just, like, I mean, and that's why I want to ask you, just even before we start talking about the actual movies you saw, which, yes, we will do more in-depth reviews on these films, but I just want to ask you, like, some stuff about the fest, like, what really stood out to you from just the, any, like, interviews, probably, which I don't think you did any interviews for that.
But hell any, like, no. I am not an interview person. I am terrified.
Okay. Well, then, like, any, like, stuff from, like, the screenings or any, like, exhibit stuff, like, whoa, what stood out to you this
there's
year?
There's a lot of things. First off, like, one of the main thing I'll mention screening-wise is I'll leave it for that when I talk about that movie. Okay. But the screening to Crazy World is maybe the most unique screening I've ever gone to in my entire life.
Well, because that's the guy who did Who Killed Captain Alex, right?
Yes, yes. Okay, John did yes. movie, and I'll touch into that when we get to that movie. But also, during that opening weekend, they closed down King Street, which is like our main entertainment district, like road, where like all the big Broadway theaters and all that stuff is. And they call it, they turn it into what they call Festival Street, which is essentially like a big old block party for TIFF. Which is where, like, a bunch of sponsors will have, like, their own set, like, sets and booths and stuff. So, like, Nespresso, they had their own, like, mini coffee shop for people. Lyft had a weird, like, trailer booth. trying to think of other stuff. Oh, there's a company called Crave, which is essentially, like, our HBO Showtime in Canada. Okay. They had their own, like, mini sets of movies and shows. So, they had, like, the main chair from Star Trek Discovery. They had the double decker fucking couch from the Lego Movie 2. And like you could actually like sit in it and take selfies and stuff.
That's fun.
The main thing though was the Dolomite exhibit that they had for like the Dolomite Is My Name movie, which essentially consisted of the actual costumes from the movie that were designed by Ruthie Carter, who just won an Oscar for Black Panther for designing those costumes.
Yeah, yeah, no, I was going to say, that sounds, I mean, just the videos I saw, that looked really, really cool. Dude,
they even had a bunch of old, like, Rudy Ray Moore, like, records there. Bruh, every cover, that man was naked with some women. It was hilarious.
Now, even the trailer started to sell that a lot, just like, this dude loved his ladies.
Oh, so. Yeah, he did. But, like, oh, also, they even gave out, like, free sunglasses at that exhibit.
Did you get a pair?
Like, they didn't look good on me, but I gave them to my mom because she loves that type of stuff.
Oh, nice.
And then, yeah, just it was just a bunch of, like, really just cool small stuff. And they even had, like, a small red carpet area, which they call, like, the fan zone or something like that. And that's where a lot of celebrities, for their red carpet, like, premieres, they'll show up and sign autographs and hang out with the fans.
Yeah, no, I saw a few videos of that. Like, I know I saw one that had Rian Johnson on it and a few of the other directors and that such. So, that's cool. I mean, it's a chance to actually, like, get interactive with it all.
Oh, it was funny. I know for some movies, I was in line for the movie, so I couldn't really, like, go to the red carpet and stuff. But I remember when I was there for Knives Out, and we were just kind of there just hanging, and then there were some people who went in and out just to go see, like, the celebrities and shit. And I remember just sitting there. It was around the corner. And all I heard was nothing but screaming for like 45 seconds. And I'm like, Chris Evans just showed up. That was the absolute cue. He didn't even need to say anything. He was like, yeah, wow. It's him.
Not anybody else. Not Daniel Craig. Not nothing. But Chris Evans. No,
There were cheers for a lot of people. But just the one that was the most sustained, I'm like, no, that is 100% Chris.
To be fair, yeah, he's one of the biggest celebrities in the world with Marvel.
Avengers just happened. This is less than 6 months ago.
That's amazing. I love that kind of stuff.
But yeah, like, the festival, like, that opening weekend is always, like, the most fun, the most festival-y, like, the city gets about it. I know commuters get mad because they close the roads because it's, like, people walk everywhere, but fuck them. It's 4 days. It's a weekend.
You gotta work? Screw that. I gotta watch movies.
Exactly. It's the Thursday to Sunday. That is it.
Man. Yeah. Festival experiences are always really weird. Like, I remember one of my friends went to Cannes 1 year, and just the stuff he had to report about, all the crazy going-ons with that was really, really cool. You know, like, even the booths with the people, like, especially that one, the booths that he was working at were the ones by the studios who were all trying to negotiate deals behind the scenes, even before the movie's premiere in some cases. Just like, okay, your movie's coming out, you're a big-name director, we'll give you $2 million for the rights or whatever.
Jesus. Kind of oh, yeah. Like, right then and there?
Well, because that's the thing, is that it's, you know, it's changing now because so many films have been flopping out of festivals that I think they're being a little more hesitant with that stuff. Yeah. But back in that heyday, when people said, like, oh, so-and-so's got a new movie, let's get that right now. I don't care what it is. I don't care who it is. We're going to get it because we want to distribute it. Mm-hmm. And, yeah. It can either go really, really well, or it could be, what, like, half the films came out of Sundance this year. Because, you know, Late Night, where they spent, like, what, $20 million for that movie.
Jesus,
and it really...
they did?
Well, it was some huge deal, like some absurd deal. Like, oh, this is gonna be the biggest hit because it's got lots of strong women in it. It's Mindy Kaling, she's hot right now. It's Emma Thompson, she's hot right now, and it didn't really pay off very well. So, yeah. So, I mean, and I'm sure there's probably less of that going on. Although there was one giant deal that just happened, I think the other day, of a movie you saw that we'll talk about.
Okay.
Yeah. So I can't wait to hear about that. But yeah, anything else about the festival before we move on?
Nope. I spent most of my time just watching movies. And yeah, it's always fun just talking about that stuff. So we have like 20 movies to cover. I mean, literally, yeah. 20 movies.
So now, one thing too, because I know you didn't get to see some of the other big movies there. Like, is there any one of the giant movies that you didn't see that you're really looking forward to seeing?
Honestly, I kind of hit all the big ones that I wanted to. If there's one movie that I wish I did, like, I wish I saw but I didn't get a chance to, it's a small movie called Jallikattu, which I know is playing at Fantastic Fest. And it's a movie in India where it's about a buffalo that kind of goes loose and just causes this crazy swirl of violence and mayhem in this small, like, village. And this movie was not on my radar at all. But a friend of mine who saw it, he was like, I don't know how not everyone is talking about this. I don't know how this is made. I don't know how people didn't die making this. Because he said, and I quote, is essentially Mad Max Fury Road crossed with the third act of Mother type of energy for the whole movie.
Okay.
I had never been more sold on a movie like that.
Oh, wait, which Mother? Bong Joon-ho's Mother or the Jennifer Lawrence Mother?
Jennifer Lawrence Mother.
Oh.
That's crazy. And at first, I was like, it just conflicted with every other screening that I had. And then the last one, I was like, I'll try and catch a screening. It completely sold out before I even got a chance to get a ticket.
Wow.
I was shocked. But at the same time, like, that word of mouth went quick.
Well then, for people at Fantastic Fest, get on that, because that sounds like a lot of
fun.
Yeah,
that's the one you gotta look out for, because apparently that's the most insane shit some people have seen this year.
Well, I know a few films that you weren't able to see. I just want to give a shout-out to these for people to keep an eye out for them. One of the big ones that came out of TIFF was Marriage Story, which is also going to show at New York Festival this coming up.
Yeah, that one's playing on Netflix in, like, I think a month or two.
Yeah, so I figured you probably figured you could wait for that one.
That one is one of those ones that, like, I wasn't really checking for that much because I'm not a Noah Baumbach fan, but I've heard nothing but the most glowing praise.
Oh, yeah. Like, I think it's currently at 100% positive Rotten Tomatoes. And then I just stumbled upon an article here on IndieWire where they talked about, like, I think, what, 300 critics ranked their top picks for narrative and documentary and other kind of stuff for the films that year. And it was on, like, second or third on almost every category they voted for. So,
okay.
Yeah, so that sounds cool.
Plus, it got second place in, like, the People's Choice
Oh, like, yeah, second runner-up, right?
Which we'll get into.
Yeah, we will. Because then, also, another film that I'm actually personally really excited to see, we talked about this on Eye on the Prize the other day, is The Two Popes, which I don't believe you saw either, right?
I did not. I had no idea that it was even getting this much buzz and praise afterwards.
Oh, yeah, no, I've been following this since Venice, because, I mean, okay, I'm not Catholic and that kind of such, but I'm very curious about movies like this, where it deals more with, like, kind of the social, political angles of how religions work, because that's just part of my academic field of interest kind of thing. But and plus, I love Jonathan Pryce and Anthony Hopkins, so I'm really keen on that one. So.
I had no idea what it was about. Just people were like, yo, the two popes are great. Then I only saw that picture of Anthony Hopkins as the pope. Was he John Paul II?
No, I think he's Pope Benedict, the one who resigned.
Oh, okay, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, the one that everyone says looks like Emperor Palpatine.
Yes. Oh, my God.
Oh, brother. But
if there's one that I also was upset I missed, but that's because it already came out. And that was Hustlers.
Yeah.
When Hustlers had premiered, everyone was like, yo, this movie's actually legitimately great. And I was like, man, I'm excited to see it, but I could just wait until the Friday, which it came out that Friday.
Yeah, no, that was kind of the same thing. That and Goldfinch came out the same weekend, which nobody's going to go see Goldfinch. I heard
it's awesome. Oh, no, they didn't. It made literally like $2 million opening weekend.
Oh, that is rough. Yeah, but then a couple other ones I know you didn't see, so just to give you guys a heads up that these ones, unfortunately, we will not talk about, but you should keep an eye out for Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood. I know you didn't get to see that one, right?
I didn't get a chance to, no.
Nah, but yeah, so far everyone's saying that it seems like it's mostly saying it's pretty good, but the thing that everyone wants to see about it, of course, is Tom Hanks, which apparently he delivers on that one. So
yeah.
And then The Lighthouse. I know you weren't able to see that one either.
Oh, dude, every screening I tried to go to didn't work out.
Oh yeah, no, and that happens, you know, when there's so many high profile movies like there were this year at TIFF, it's just a matter of, you know, you're not guaranteed to see everything. So
yeah. I know that my friend / sequel co-host Ali, she managed to see it, and she was raving about it. She's like, this movie's out of its fucking mind.
There seems like there's a lot of movies here that are just out of their freaking minds.
Yeah, like Lighthouse is very different in its approach of being weird as shit. Okay. That's all I know.
Yeah, I'm very curious. So, all right, that's mostly just for those ones. So let's get started with the things you actually saw. And okay. I can't wait for this one, because this is one that, out of everything showing at the festivals this year, this seems to be the number one pick for almost everybody who's seen it, and it's Parasite.
Oh, spoiler alert, it's also mine. It's my number one.
Well, there you go.
Parasite is the first thing I saw and the best thing I saw. Wow. Not to say that everything else wasn't bad, but just this was literally like almost impossible to top for me. Like I walked out like, I'm not seeing a better thing this festival.
Yeah, well, just to set up for people, this is the new film from Bong Joon-ho, who did Snowpiercer, The Host, not the Stephanie Meyer one, but the Korean monster movie one. He also did Okja, and this film's already getting so much buzz. It already won the Palme d'Or at Cannes, and then I believe this was the first runner-up for TIFF, was it? Or
it was a second runner-up.
Second runner-up, that's right, you said. Yeah.
But yeah, this movie is a trip. I'll say, just to set it up for people, that it essentially follows this family who are very poor and also incredibly scummy and incredibly smart. Like, they are slick-ish, like, the most slick con men type of family I've ever seen. And at one point, so it's like the mother, the father, the son, and the daughter. And at one point, the son, his friend, shows up, and he's like, hey, I used to tutor for this rich family, but I got to go out of country, so I put in a good word for you, so you go and, like, work over there. I know you need the money and stuff. And so when he starts working for this family, he realizes that the mother of that rich family, not the smartest person in the bunch. So he starts recommending other people for other jobs in the house, and those people are his family. So they all worm their way into this family's house in different ways. And it starts off as, like, a really dark comedy, where, like, everything is just, like, really overtly funny, especially the way that they manage to finagle themselves into this house. But then there's a point where everything just stops, and everything gets deadly serious.
Oh, boy.
Shit gets real so fast. And I will leave it at that, but the movie has so many twists and turns, and every single one of them, you're just like, I can't believe this is happening. But this is fantastic. Every performance in this movie is amazing. I'm not sure the actors by names. But
well, the big one that's in all of Bong Joon-ho's films is Song Kang-ho, who I believe is the father of the family.
Yes. Oh, he was a star in this. but he just, I'm sorry.
Yeah, no,
everyone just had a just, like, their character arcs were fantastic. The way, like, the families played out, like, the way their interactions with each other was great. It talks a lot about class, as you would, like, obviously expect from, like, the rich versus the poor, the smart versus the dumb, like, who's entitled to that money.
Well, and that seems to be a big topic of Bong Joon-ho's film in general, because Snowpiercer is all about that, and even little subtextual stuff's about that in, like, Okja and The Host, too. Mm-hmm. So
this one's way more, I'd say this one's more overt than even Snowpiercer.
Okay.
But it's incredible. Like, I cannot praise this movie enough, and I just want you to go in just as cold as possible. So I gave the basic hook, but there's so much more to it.
Yeah, I'm going to warn people with the Wikipedia page, too. Don't look for the synopsis, because it's already come out in Korea and Cannes. Somebody wrote out the entire plot.
It's already
plot.
Leaked. The movie's fully leaked. So don't go out of... Like, this is one of those things I'm like, watch it in a theater.
Yeah.
It's coming out in like a month.
Yeah, so I'm excited. So I guess for an arbitrary rating, what would you give this movie?
Oh, this is like a full-on like 10 out of 10. 10 peaches out of 10. Oh yeah, there's another use of peaches in this. It's not like Call Me By Your Name, but it's a very different and much just crazy effective use.
Oh boy. Okay. No, I can't wait. Like, people are actually saying this might be good enough to not just compete for international awards, like, the international Oscar, but this could merit some consideration for, like, Best Picture Director this year. And
I would absolutely agree with that.
Wow. That's amazing. All right.
God, it might, like... Even outside of TIFF, it might be my, like, number one or number two of the year.
Wow. That's literally all I've heard from people just across the board, so I cannot wait. Something else that's... I mean, so there's quite a few movies you saw with, like, Korean, Japanese, Asian, whatever kind of thing. So I want to talk about this one, too, because it's a new Takashi Miike movie. We have to talk about First Love in this game.
His 104th movie.
Oh, my God.
Keep in mind... He has over 100 goddamn movies.
Yeah, seriously, he produces like 2 or 3 a year for the last 30 years, it feels like. So it's just...
Not just produce, like full-on direct.
Well, direct, yes, yeah, yeah. But
yeah, so this movie is... The way I can put it is that it's essentially... It starts off like almost a Guy Ritchie movie, because it's like a bunch of these different casts of characters all interacting with another, where the first one is like this boxer who gets told by his doctor that he's got, like, a brain tumor, and then he's got, like, not long to live.
Aww.
And he comes across this woman who's kind of running away from, like, this gang, but also dealing with, like, a drug addiction. And her drug addiction manifests in a way where it's, like, this random old dude in his underwear just appearing in front of her, and she's always terrified and shit. Like, it's Takashi Miike, so it's weird as shit.
Yeah, because I always see random naked people or half-naked people when I hallucinate, so...
Right when you're on that bender, when you're on that coke, yeah, that happens all the time,
dude. My caffeine highs get crazy.
But then at the same time, there's also like this gang war between the Chinese mafia and the Japanese mafia, and one dude is trying to play both sides, end up stealing one big old batch of coke, which starts his whole feud. And at first, I was just confused at where it was going. Like, I wasn't bored, but I was like, this is just kind of odd and kind of disjointed.
Yeah.
But then it all comes together in a third act that's one of the most insane things I've ever seen. Where all these characters start dying, bullets start flying, fists are flying, swords are flying, blood is spilling. And it's insane, but it's also so wacky about it that you're just laughing the whole time intentionally. And as Takashi Miike does, there's some weird shit that I won't spoil, but like stuff that just happens is not explained, but just continues on. You're like, all right, I guess. But honestly, it's a lot of fun. I enjoyed myself a lot watching this.
Yeah, nice. So like you're saying, it is pretty disturbing. Like I guess similar to other Miike films, right? In terms of like violence or stuff like
it's
that.
It's not even disturbing as much as just, it's so over the top that they're fully playing it comically.
Okay.
Like, there's some people who get dismembered, and the way their reactions are just mostly hilarious.
Yeah, this feels like it's one you would have to watch to really get the experience of it. Like, even explaining it doesn't really do justice, right?
I'm struggling to explain it because so much happens. Yeah. It's just, this is one of those things where it's like a lot of crazy shit happening over the course of one night type of deal.
Okay. Well, I mean, like, would you say there's anything particular about the performances or how it's made kind of stuff that really stand out? Aside from the general impression?
Generally, I'll say that one gangster who is, like, the one who's playing both sides, he is probably, like, the source of a lot of laughs. I wasn't sure how I felt about the boxer character, but he did warm over on me. Like, I ended up liking him a lot, and I did like the chemistry between him and the main girl.
Yeah, because the boxer character is played by Masataka Kubota, who I believe he was in 13 Assassins with Miike as well.
Oh, so. Word! Okay, that's sick.
Yeah, yeah. No, he's been in talking about people get just lots of work. He's got a lot of stuff, even just the last 10 years. But, and then I believe the girl here is Noa Omori. Sorry, that's a different actor here. Anyways, I don't know Japanese actors very well, sadly. Yeah. But
unfortunately, I'm not familiar with them either. But yeah, no, this is one of those ones that, like, you watch that fits perfectly in a Midnight Madness type scenario where it's just like you get your friends and you just watch some wild shit just go on screen.
Awesome. So then I guess what would you say is your final thought or initial, you know, your arbitrary rating for that?
I give it 7 just chopped up bodies out of 10.
Oh boy. Now, this next one here, I don't really know a lot about this movie. I'm seeing a couple diverse opinions, although it's mostly a positive for this one. It's The Wild Goose Lake.
Oh, now, hey, yeah. It's a Chinese neo-noir gangster film. And this, I honestly hated.
Okay.
I'll be straight up with you.
Yeah, I know. It seems like you're in the minority of this one, but I just want to hear your thoughts. Like, so what is this movie about, even?
So the way I could put it is that it's about, yeah, essentially about the Chinese underworld, and the main gangster, he gets framed for some shit. it's hard to put it, because honestly, the plot really doesn't matter, or at least the way it goes about is so screamingly dull. That, like, I'm having a struggle trying to tell you exactly what happened.
So, like you're saying, though, it's not that you couldn't follow it, it's just that you had a hard time trying to follow it, kind of thing.
Yeah. It's not even that it's convoluted as much as just the way it goes about is really disjointed. Because the first half of the movie is almost, like, have you seen You Were Never Really Here?
Not all the way, but I get you.
But at least enough to where you can go, like, the way they depict the violence on that is that they don't ever really show it on screen. They show you, like, the aftermath of the type of deal.
Yeah, like you'll see, like, some blood spatter, you'll see some exactly. stuff that's implied.
So,
yeah.
Aside from, like, a little glimpse, like, a couple glimpses, that's how they play it. So they play it, like, really dark, really slow, really methodical, and kind of critical just about, like, underworld society in general. And then the second half...
Is there a way to not be critical of underworld society?
Just metaphorical and shit. But then the second half is just goes into a crazy amount of violence. But I didn't care about any of the characters. And so as a result, I just struggled really giving a shit about what was happening. I was like, there was a really good kill involving an umbrella, I'll say that. But
umbrella?
Involving an umbrella. And it was unique, I'll give you that. But... the whole time I was, aside from that brief moment, I was just mostly bored. And then I'll full on say it, there's a rape scene that happens that's so unnecessary. Ooh. That I went from boredom to absolutely, like, I hate this fucking movie.
Okay. No, that sounds about right with this kind of stuff. And the guy who made this movie, his name is Dio Yinyan. He's only done so many movies as a director, because he mostly is a screenwriter by trade. But I think the last thing he did was Black Coal, Thin Ice, Chinese film he premiered in 2014.
Okay.
So, yeah, but this is the first film in a while.
Yeah, but yeah, no, I was just really just unimpressed, honestly. I know there's a lot of people who dug it. I know friends of mine who were like, no, I loved it, but I was bored to tears. And then eventually just actively just like, I hate this thing.
Okay, well, I guess to not just go on too long with that, what would you give your arbitrary rating for that?
Like... 3.5 decapitations out of 10.
Oof. Well, hopefully this next film's a little bit more positive from you, because I know you were super, super excited about this movie, Weathering With You.
Oh, yes. Yes, I was. We had a whole contentious thing on Breakfast Club about this thing.
Well, because, to be fair, Japanese trailers for anime movies are incomprehensible, to say it the least.
Because they put the whole they put a whole monologue with a bunch of random scenes that you're just like, I don't know what this is in context to everything else.
Yeah. So, I mean, and that's the thing. It's like, I would complain about that, except all anime movies do this. Even Dragon Ball Super Broly had a trailer like that where I'm like, oh, I don't know is happening. So, but to be fair, I have no idea what this movie is about. I can never discern the plot from the trailer. So, okay, just a synopsis. What is this movie about?
Okay, so essentially here, I should mention that it's from the same people who made Your Name. Makoto Shinkai is directing this as well. So it follows this kid named Hodaka Morishima, who used to live on an island, but then he's like, I just want to go and live in Tokyo. So he literally ran away from home and just kind of lives almost in squalor. Like, he's just like just trying to survive. And eventually he ends up like finding a job, finding a space to like stay and stuff. And then he ends up coming across this girl who has this magic. I should mention that it's raining like hell in Tokyo at this point. And they eventually find this, he meets up with this girl named Hina Amano, who has the ability to manipulate the weather in the sense that like she can stop the rain and magically have the sun shine in this one specific spot, like wherever she is.
Okay.
And it starts off first, it ends up being like, it's overall, it's just kind of like a magical kind of fantasy fairy tale love story type of deal, where at first off, the two of them, they start trying to make money off of it. They're just like, hey, we have the sunshine girl. And so people would like hire them to like have the sunshine at their events because it's downpouring for literally like months. And I'll say overall, like, the movie is very sweet. It's super lovey-dovey, that type of stuff. I'll say one thing that made me laugh that just kind of personally took me out of the movie is that the typical grand gesture that they have in these types of movies, in this case, they show in the movie has massive repercussions, not just for them, but for everybody around them.
Oh, really?
And I was like, this is the most asshole shit that you could do. Like, I understand what it means in context of this movie and what it means for you personally. But I'm like, no, if I knew about this, if I was like a bystander, I knew that you did this, I would hunt you down. Like, you fucking asshole.
Yeah, okay. So that sounds kind of like what I could imply from the trailer. But so, I mean, because it's got Your Name, so it's definitely very good looking, I assume, right?
Mm, yeah. Oh, no, it's gorgeous looking. Like, I'll say, I watched this on an empty stomach, and that was one of the worst things I could have done, because all the food is so well animated. Like, dude, the best looking animated McDonald's I have ever seen in my life.
McDonald's, wow.
Yeah, at one point he goes to McDonald's. That's actually where their initial meeting is, because she used to work at McDonald's.
Wow, I didn't think they would do product placement in anime.
Yeah, they have the way they overly detailed this burger, this Big Mac.
That's a trend in all anime, it feels like, or even not even anime, like freaking Final Fantasy 15 does that, where they have like meticulously rendered food in there, right? Dragon Ball does that all the time.
The worst one though was there's a point where the two of them are having dinner together where it's like Hina Hodaka and her little brother, who is like, his whole thing is that he's like a ladies man who's like 12 years old. So he has like, he's in like middle school and has like four girlfriends. But having dinner, and at one point they're having like fried rice with like an egg in the middle, and it was the most scrumptious thing I ever wanted to have. But again, I skipped out on breakfast, so my stomach was in pain. Like, I was like, why are you doing this to me?
That's amazing. The only time I've ever felt that is during that movie Chef, where I didn't eat before that one either, and I'm just like,
yeah.
Oh. So yeah, okay, that's cool. So yeah, I mean, it sounds
like it is really schmaltzy, and like, but it's kind of inevitable in these kinds of things, especially with like anime romantic comedies or romantic fantasies. But honestly, it's enjoyable enough to where it has its own merits. I'll say it's definitely not better than Your Name.
Yeah, I was gonna
Your
say.
Name, I was an emotional wreck by. But this one, I'll say it is a very, very good follow-up.
Okay. Well, what's interesting about this film, too, is that it's not competing for the animated film Oscar this year. It's competing for the international feature Oscar, because Japan put it as a representative for that. So,
okay.
Do you think it's got a chance?
I think it's maybe got a chance at a nomination, but definitely not at a win.
Okay. Well, I mean, because Parasite's competing for that one, so of course
exactly.
It's gonna lose. Yeah.
Parasite, if it doesn't win, I'll be livid.
Yeah. So then, what would you say final impressions of this one?
I'll give it 7.5 overly animated eggs out of 10.
Okay, now this one here, again, there's some of these movies I just never heard of or don't know much about. This is Bring Me Home. So, yes. Yeah, what? Tell me about this one.
Okay, so Bring Me Home is another Korean thriller, and the moment I heard Korean thriller, I was like all about it, because for the most part, I love them.
They can be pretty good. Yeah.
Yeah, this thing, Korean thrillers, I'll say this now, Korean thrillers, because we're at such a high standard, that this one just felt super standard by comparison, which is a shame. But yeah, this follow, it's essentially about this woman, played by Lee Young-A, who most people know as Lady Vengeance in Lady Vengeance.
Oh, okay.
And so her child has been missing for, I want to say, about a couple months, or if not a couple years. And she's still just desperate. Like, her life is just kind of broken down. At the beginning, her husband dies from, like, this accident that was entirely preventable because, like, asshole kids called the number that was on their card. Like, hey, if you have any information about my child, call this number. And they brought him on a wild goose chase and gets run over by a car. So this woman is going through some shit.
Yeah.
And then at one point, these two cops go to a fishing village. And, like, there's, like, in a completely separate area of Japan. And they see what looks a lot like this kid. Like, has a lot of, like, these, like, a lot of, like, the moles and the same, like, physical features. And so one of them calls the woman and says, you need to come here because I think this might be your kid. And so when she goes over to this fishing village, everyone's like, no, that's not your kid. He's, like, a kid that just works here. And you find out, like, this kid who is actually, like, it's very obvious it's this kid. He's treated like shit. He's been beaten, abused. And she's just suspicious the whole time. And she's just trying to determine, like, are these people lying to me or not? Hmm. And the thing is that the reason this movie isn't completely disposable is because of that lead performance by her. Like, she is great. You empathize with her so heavily. You're like, no parent ever wants to lose their child, and especially have them be in the condition that they're in.
Yeah.
And so I think her, just following her, you're just rooting for the whole time. But other than that, it follows a lot of the tropes that you see in a lot of just like these kinds of thrillers, even American thrillers. And it never really rises above that.
Okay, so it's just very predictable, basically.
It's super predictable.
Okay. Oh, that's a bummer. Because, I mean, I just, now looking at her picture, I can't get over the fact she looks just like a friend of mine from grad school. So I'm just like, I just imagine that person being, Lady Vengeance. I'm just like, okay, that's appealing. But anyways, yeah, so that kind of sounds like when we watched that one movie this summer. What was it? The Gangster, the Criminal, and the Cop, whatever.
Yeah, except I like that one because I think that one, the performances and just the way the story progressed, I was still invested in it on that level, even outside the performances. I'm like, that's an interesting hook. But this one didn't really have that much different to, like, kind of stand out.
Okay. Yeah, so this one didn't even have any, like, crazy stuff, really, it sounds like, right?
Not even, really.
Oh. See, because that's at least what helped with Gangster, Cop, and the Criminal, because it was directed so insanely that you're kind of like, okay. That's,
yeah. There's unfortunately never anything like that. You would hope that there is, but it never really happens.
Oh, that's a bummer. Okay, so I guess good lead performance, but otherwise it's just not even a bad movie, it's just a very safe movie, it sounds like.
Yeah, basically.
Okay, so what would that equate to for a rating then?
I would give it 6 fishing villages out of 10.
Okay, that sounds just about right. Now, this one I'm actually very intrigued by because I didn't know anything about this movie before the fest, and this is seems to be one of the few that everyone's just like, oh, this was one of the biggest surprises of the festival. It's The Sound of Metal.
Oh, man. That one. Ooh, this is one of those ones that grew on me so much, and I already liked it from the get-go. I know there are some people who saw it the night before me, and they're like, you're probably going to hate this. And I was like, I'll give it a shot. But no, I adore this. So for the people who don't know, it's following Riz Ahmed, and he's playing a drummer in a noise metal band with his girlfriend / bandmate. And he early on in the movie, he starts to lose his hearing, and he loses it quick.
Ooh.
And it's just, for the most part, it's just him just trying to deal with, like, having him losing his hearing. He's still determined on, like, no, I can work through this. So we can just, like, play through you and stuff. And it's just causing, like, a massive strain in his relationship. And just him just trying to build up money so he can get, like, a procedure which might fix his problems. He's not sure. But at the same time, he gets sent to this, like, house full of, like, it's a house full of, like, deaf people who are also, like, former addicts because he is a himself a former addict. And just this movie, man, this movie blew me the fuck away, honestly.
Yeah, no, that's what I've been hearing from most people, that just, it's one of those ones that nobody expected much from it, but especially when you're dealing with stuff that deals with, like, deafness and that stuff, there's, it's such a topic that's not discussed a lot in film that I feel like it's something where, oh, sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, yeah, like, you're right in that, especially because you're always afraid, especially with these types of things, that they might make it super manipulative or make, like, the people who are disabled seem like charity cases. Mm-hmm. And thankfully, this is absolutely not the case.
Well, because I was thinking, like, that one film that Fernando Meirelles did, Blindness, which did that, where it's like, oh, the blind people need to be led by the one person who can see because they're so helpless kind of thing.
Exactly. It doesn't do anything like that. It does not do that shit like that at all. Like, when Riz Ahmed goes to this house, and he's being led by, like, the leader of the house, Joe, played by this dude named Paul Racy, who's also, like, a hidden gem in this movie.
Nice.
He's very self-sufficient. Like, this whole house is very self-sufficient. And it's essentially, like, Riz trying to figure shit out. And I'll say this, that this has some of the best sound design I've heard in a movie in a long time.
Ooh.
Because, like, most of the movie, you're occupying Riz's character. His name is Ruben. You're occupying his headspace. So there's a lot of scenes where you just won't hear shit. And, like, but it's, like, very muffled, but enough to where you don't, like, hear. It's, like, almost like sensory deprivation. And at my screening, they actually had the movie fully captioned. Oh. And that was an interesting idea. And then especially there's a point when he's Ruben is having his first dinner with all the people in this house, and they're all communicating in sign language. And there's no subtitles at all. So as a person with hearing who doesn't know ASL, you're like Ruben, where you're like, I don't know what is happening. Like, I don't know what they're talking about. I don't know what they're saying. And but then eventually, like, he obviously learns how to do ASL. And then they'll have another conversation, and it's entirely in sign language. And then they caption it. You're like, okay, he's progressing. Like, you actually feel the progression of this character. And this movie is so just, like, just sensitively done. Like, you buy Ruben as a flawed human being. You want to root for him. And at the same time, they don't. When I mentioned early on about them having this whole idea of, like, hey, this thing might solve your problems, or, like, at least give you some form of hearing, this hearing aid, they very established, like, this is not a solution. Like, it might be one, but it not might not be the way that you think it is. Like, it's, the director had mentioned this in the Q&A, that it's very much like a parallel for addiction, that he's, like, constantly trying to chase his hearing back. Like, no, I can do this. Like, I know it's gonna work. And it's very clear that, like, it might not be the case, or if it is, it's not what you think.
Okay.
And God, like, I can go on about this movie for a minute.
No, I'm even more impressed that the guy who directed this movie and co-wrote it, this is his directorial debut for feature films, at least in terms of narrative.
Yeah, Darius Marder.
He also co-wrote Place Beyond the Pines.
Yeah, yes. He worked with Derek Cian France in it. And This movie is great. I should also mention that when she's here, the girlfriend, Lou, played by Olivia Cooke, she's great.
Oh, okay.
Like, there's a good chunk of the movie where she, like, kind of goes away for, like, an understandable reason. But, like, when it's, like, her and him and she's just trying to support him, but knowing, like, this is going to go bad. Like, I'm afraid that you might go back to heroin and all this stuff. It is so well done. If I had any issues with it, It does run a little bit long.
Okay.
It is, like, 2 hours and 10 minutes. I think you could, like, the third act you could trim by, like, 5-10 minutes. But the way the movie ends is so beautiful that, like, I was enraptured by it, honestly.
Nice. Now, I see one other actor that I really love in this film, too. Matthew Omerick, who played Richard.
She plays Lou's father, who comes in like, the third act.
Okay. Wow.
And he's good, but at the same time, his kid, like, it's necessary to show his character, but at the same time, it kind of doesn't feel as necessary in the grand scheme of things.
Okay, so they just wanted some notable actor to come in kind of thing, it feels
like.
Yeah,
it feels like more like an extended cameo, if anything.
Fair enough. Well, I'm excited because Amazon picked this up too, so it's going to get some major distribution from them. So
yeah, when I saw it, it still didn't have any distribution yet, so I'm glad Amazon picked it up, but this is definitely one that people should look on their radar, especially if just anything alone, Riz Ahmed. He is incredible in this. Like, this is his acting showcase, and he's in it for pretty much every shot of this movie.
Wow.
And he works it just incredibly well.
Nice. No, I can't wait.
I would, like, I'm hoping that it goes, like, to an Oscar. I'm not sure. But it depends on, like, how the buzz just kind of goes about in a couple of months. But, like, I would love for him to get a nomination for this.
Yeah. No, that's the hard thing, is that there's just so many contenders this year. But that would be really cool to see him get nominated. So, I guess, what would you give it for a final rating?
Nine shitty RVs out of 10. yeah, dude, this thing is great. Yeah, just keep a lookout for it whenever it comes out.
Oh, I can't wait. Yeah, I think it's coming out, I want to say, either next month or... Oh, no, sorry. Yeah, there's no official release date just yet, but I think it's going to come out probably within the next month or two.
I'm sure. I would hope so, because, like, yeah, this needs to be seen also.
All right, something that is coming out next month, though, and, oh, boy, this is going to be a big one to talk about, because this is the TIFF People's Choice Award winner this year, Jojo Rabbit.
Oh, yeah, the new Taika Waititi movie.
Yep. So this is interesting because... Well, I mean, for the people who haven't heard, it's the film about, you know, the little Nazis, essentially, where, and I'm oversimplifying it there, but...
Yeah, a little bit, but...
Well, but just to say a thing, that this is surprisingly one of the most controversial movies to come out of the fest. Like, everyone expected, like, oh, it's Taika Waititi, everyone's gonna love this, and I think it's currently sitting somewhere like 60-70% critic approval.
Yeah, it's device, I'll give it that, just to set it up.
Okay.
But essentially about this kid, Jojo Betzler, who is essentially a Hitler youth, where he idolizes the fuck out of Hitler to the point where Hitler is his imaginary friend, who's played by Taika. And I'll mention right now off the bat, Taika's hilarious every scene that he shows up in.
Dude, that dude is just so freaking funny, even just as an actor, you know?
Mm-hmm. But yeah, essentially, he idolizes the fuck out of Nazis. Like, yo, they're the best. I can't wait to, like, be on the front line and hunt some Jews and all this shit. And it's fucked up. But yeah, you're just like, this little kid is just really good. But at one point, he gets an accident during the summer camp. He's like, oh, okay, I guess I can't be a fucking Nazi anymore because I'm not perfect. Like, I don't fit the image that they want. Mm-hmm. And so he just kind of hang around at home. And then he finds out that his mother, who's played by Scarlett Johansson, is actually hiding a Jewish girl in his house. And so at first he's like, no, you're a Jew. Like, what the fuck are you doing here? Like, how did you get here? You're evil and all this stuff. And she slowly tries to turn him like, yo, listen, you're not really a Nazi. You're just like a kid who's just disillusioned and wants friends.
Sure. I mean,
and so it's just him essentially just confronting his own actual ideology and like, maybe what I'm liking is not right.
Yeah, no, that's what I suspected from the reviews and that stuff. That's what the overall premise and the idea of it is about. But mm-hmm. I mean, and this does come to the fact of what people seem to be having the biggest issue with is how they're depicting Nazis in this kind of like.
Oh, no, the way they depict them is that they're full on idiots.
Yeah.
It's like, they have all these ideas that like, that they're very obvious, like, hey, this might not work, but maybe it will. And I'll say that, like, yeah, people are either loving it or not liking it. And I personally fall on the side that I don't really like it all that much.
Aww.
I'll say this, that it's, if you're coming in with this movie thinking this is going to be a biting, just mean satire, like, this movie's just like, fuck Nazis, it's not.
No.
It's really not. This movie is essentially way sweeter than expected. Like, not towards the Nazis, don't get me wrong.
No.
It's
no.
About, like, a kid who's just, like, kind of learning, hey, maybe hate, like, blind hate is not the way. It's, like, love might actually be the love will save the world is the, essentially, like, the take that they go with this. And
yeah, no, and that's like the case where they're like, oh, it's an anti-hate satire. Kind
yeah,
of like
when
that.
They say anti-hate, yeah. They really mean anti-hate. And while that worked for a lot of people, personally, it just made the satire really toothless to me. Like, it could have gone harder, but they really didn't. Also, one thing I need to mention. Sam Rockwell needs to stop playing these kind of fucking roles, honestly.
Like, oh, no, is he becoming the new Michael Fassbender?
I love Sam Rockwell, but he needs to stop playing racists who get, like, a character arc where they're, like, they're not all that bad at the very end. I hate that shit. And the thing is, he's done this for, like, the last four movies that he's been in, and so I'm sick of it. Like,
I mean...
At this point, I'm going to buy that you're an actual racist.
I mean, I loved him in Three Billboards, personally, but I know you and I have got come to terms on that.
I think he was great in Three Billboards, and he's not a bad performance, but his character and character arc, I'm tired of.
Okay.
And it doesn't help that, like, Alfie Allen is, like, a second-in-command, and they have this whole, like, pseudo, like, oh, he's very, like, they're gay for each other type of deal, and it's not in a homophobic way, but it's in a way that's, like, this is kind of obvious, and I don't really like it.
Okay. Well, wow, Theon, oh boy. But yeah. Yeah, it seems like there's a lot of big actors in this, like Stephen Merchant, Rebel Wilson, Scarlett Johansson. Yeah. You know, people like working with Taika, especially after how big his films have been, with like Hunt for the Wilder People, What We Do in the Shadows, Thor.
I will say also, like on a positive note, that like the two main characters that we follow here, JoJo, played by Roman Griffin Davis, and Elsa, who's like the Jewish girl, played by your girl from Leave No Trace, Thomasin McKenzie.
I love this actress. She's so great.
They're both great. Like, they're legitimately fantastic.
Awesome.
And Rebel Wilson, she actually didn't get on my nerves because she's barely in it. But the time that she's in, I'm like, all right, she's pretty funny. But I'll say the one spotlight out of, like, the characters who's, like, the outright funniest outside of, like, Taika as Hitler is, like, this little kid, Georgie, who's, like, JoJo's best friend. Every time he shows up is so fucking funny. I can't underestimate enough. I'll say, if you watch that trailer, don't watch. If you haven't watched the recent trailer, don't watch it, because it spoils one of the funniest parts in it. I'll say that.
Okay, because I think I know who you're talking about. So
yeah,
yeah.
Like, no. If you've seen the trailer, he's like the small little chubby kid.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's cool. So it's not that it's without any merit. It's just you felt like it could have pushed a little bit harder.
It could have pushed it a little bit harder, but I feel like that wasn't the intent of the movie at all.
Yeah.
So it's like I wasn't on the same wavelength, but at the same time, I wished for something a lot better.
Yeah. So now it's interesting, though, because the People's Choice Award winner often goes to be a Best Picture nominee or a Best Picture winner in a couple cases. So
yeah.
Do you think this has any chance of being a big competitor for Best Picture stuff?
I think it could, because it's very much a crowd pleaser. So it might end up being there just on a basis of it being a crowd-pleasing movie.
Okay.
But I don't know. I doubt it'll win Best Picture. I don't think so.
Oh, no. Probably. I highly doubt it, too. But then...
But it'll get a couple nominations, maybe for, like, screenplay and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah. And then do you feel that a lot of comparisons have been made to this and Life is Beautiful in terms of tone of how they portray this stuff. Do you feel this is a fair comparison to make, or...?
Yeah. I mean, I haven't seen Life is Beautiful, but from what I understand, it's like a lighthearted movie within this fucked-up time.
Yeah, idea, it goes for the same kind of ideology where it's like, yeah, the dad realizes the horrors of the Nazis, so what he's trying to do is protect his son as long as possible from being exposed to the cruel reality of it kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it does kind of have that little, almost weirdly whimsical, like the movie opens with like a German version of I Want to Hold Your Hand by the Beatles.
Oh, yeah. No, I noticed there's a bunch of like cover songs in German. Like even the trailer had that, I think, too. So
yeah.
Okay. That's kind of funny. But yeah, so I guess what would you say is your final rating then for this one?
I'll give it 6.5 swastikas out of 10.
Oh, boy. Along with that, now we got to talk about this movie because I'm super, super excited to hear about Crazy World.
Oh, man. I'll say right now, I don't think I could give a rating to this.
I don't blame you, because it's the newest one from the guys who did Who Killed Captain Alex.
Yes.
So.
Okay. So I mentioned this screening was like the weirdest, most unique screening I've ever been to. And I'll just say that it was a one-of-a-kind screening for a couple of reasons.
Okay.
First off, number one, the director, Isaac Nabwana, had never been to he had never seen a movie in a theater before.
Yep.
Much less one of his own movies. So like literally, when they got him to come to Canada, it was literally the most last minute shit that they could have done. They were like trying hard as fuck, and they made it, thankfully.
That's great. I'm really happy, because these guys are pretty much just self-funding themselves with all this stuff, you know?
100%. Like, these movies, like, if you look at, like, American dollars-wise, these don't cost more than, like, $200.
Yeah.
And I'll say that if there's anything that makes you just enjoy film, like, the love and art of filmmaking, it is this. And, like, mm-hmm. You might scoff at that, but I'm, like, legitimately being sincere.
No, I agree, because I saw I Hate Everything's video about Who Killed Captain Alex, and I really got the feeling of that, where it's like, you know, look, we're no one's going to say this is a great movie, but when you see the passion that these guys put behind this stuff, you really just fall in love with these people.
Yeah, the second thing is that this movie had live commentary, because...
Oh, no, not one of those video jokers, did it?
Oh, yeah, they had a video joker.
Oh.
They had that shit live, and to be honest, it, for the most part, it was great. There were times where it was distracting as hell. So for the people who don't know, Video Joker, it's like a dude who's running commentary about the movie and improving it. And it's not like Riff Tracks, where it's like actively making fun, but it's like it adds on to like whatever the fuck is happening.
It's like watching some guy in the theater just going, hey, movie, 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 action, blood!
Oh, so there were times where, honestly, it was so much funnier than, like, what was happening in the actual movie. And there's times where I'm like, all right, this is a little bit distracting.
Yeah.
But, so there was that. They'd also shot footage exclusively for the screening.
Oh?
Where they're like, hey, at Toronto, don't pirate this movie or the piracy police will come after you. And so, literally, halfway through the movie, it stops. The lights come on and they play another video. It's like, there's someone here pirating the movie. It's you. And then they point to the programmer of the festival. And so, a dude dressed exactly the same shows up out of the crowd and grabs him and takes him away. They had a whole skit mid-movie. But the energy was so on that wavelength, I'm like, all right, I get this.
That's amazing.
And so, the movie itself, it's about, essentially, apparently it's based off, like, shit that actually happens in Uganda, where mm-hmm. it's, like, people who are kidnapping children and, like, sacrificing them, whether it's for, like, good luck or whatever, but, like, child kidnapping is very common. And so what they did with this is that, like, they had a bunch of kids who were kidnapped by these, like, adults who were trying to sacrifice them for, like, money or good fortune or, like, building and shit.
Jeez.
And, but the thing is, these kids are martial arts stars. They're known as the Waka stars. So these kids beat, every time they try to get captured, they beat the shit out of these dudes. And I'll say that, again, while this movie is low budget, their choreography, while they, like, it makes it to the sense of, like, every hit that they do, you're just cheering, like, yo, beat these dudes up.
Well, because that's the thing, like, even seeing the Who Killed Captain Alex behind-the-scenes stuff, that these guys actually are trying to do kung fu. Like, they actually do, like, classes.
Yeah, they do on, like, full-on, like, acrobatics and shit. Like, they're going hard at it.
Yeah.
And, well, like, again, while the green screen stuff is, like, very, very, very low budget, noticeably.
No surprise.
At the same time, you're just impressed by, like, no, they're legitimately going for, like, all this athleticism and shit.
That's awesome.
I'll say one of my favorite things was that they promoted other movies while in the middle of the movie. So, like, one of the characters is, like, one of the main actors from their other movies, like, Who Killed Captain Alex, and another movie called Bad Black. I don't remember what his name was. I think it was, like, Jackie or Bruce Q or something like that, like a play on Bruce Lee. And they stopped the movie and go, hey, he was this dude in this movie and this dude in this movie. And I was like, I kind of want to see those movies now.
Yeah, that's the thing that's really hard to see original copies of these films, because one, they're basically making them on the, you know, like back to back with each other, so you have to just delete old files to make new movies kind of thing. But it's also just, I mean, when we say that these movies are cheap and really hard to produce for these people, they are, because just the conditions.
Here's the thing.
Yeah.
They're available on Blu-ray now.
Oh, they are?
They just, one of the dudes announced, hey, yeah, we put Bad Black and Who Killed Captain Alex on Amazon together in a Blu-ray, translated in a bunch of different languages. I think they said like 60 something, one of them being Klingon. But like, Klingon. They're available like now to buy on Amazon.
That's great. That's awesome.
And then the other sweet thing was, like, after the movie, because it was so last minute for the video Joker and the director to show up, they Skyped in to see the kids. And so the Waka stars. And so the Waka stars saw this huge crowd just applauding and a standing ovation and everything. And it was so genuinely sweet.
Oh, that's amazing. See, these are the stories I love to hear about for filmmaking. You know, this kind of stuff, you just really feel attached to people like who make these kind of films.
Yeah, like, they're doing this shit, in, like, with, like, despite all odds, with, like, no money. It's like, you can do this too.
Yeah.
And it's, like, it's legitimately inspiring. Even outside of just, like, the over-the-top nature of, like, the movie itself.
Yeah, no, because I know a lot of these kind of African films like this, because, I mean, I've visited African families and friends of mine and stuff who watch these kind of movies, and they are meant to be
these movies
just
are fucking ridiculous.
Oh, sure!
Like, but even, like, their, like, dramas are, like, over-the-top soap operas.
Yeah, yeah, and so I accept that that's part of the culture of the filmmaking nature for that kind of stuff, you know? And it's just, yeah, I could see why it's hard for you to give a rating for this, because it's just, it defies, like, a objective rating for that kind
exactly.
of thing.
Exactly. Like, I can't. I honestly, in good consciousness, can't do it.
Okay, fair enough.
But just know that it is an enjoyable movie in its own right.
Yeah, no, I'm really looking forward to this. Like, after I saw the Who Killed That Captain Alex video, I really want to see these in their original form. So
it's also a good thing that the movie's like 67 minutes. Like, it's an in and out type of deal. Because honestly, if it had been any longer, I feel like it would have gotten on people's nerves.
Sure.
But 67 minutes is like a nice, just like, way to kill an hour.
Okay. Well, something else that's also pretty crazy that you saw is the movie Guns Akimbo.
Oh, yeah. Who? Man, Guns Akimbo. So, oh, this boy. Stars Daniel Radcliffe as, like, this video game programmer. And he essentially is working for, like, a really shitty, like, kind of iPhone game. Something like those iPhone games that, like, that are charging money, like, every 5 minutes that kids, yeah, like, buy into. But he does that by day. And by night, he's essentially, like, a troll hunter, where he goes into, like, message boards and trolls the trolls.
Oh, those kind of troll hunters. I was thinking, like, the other kind.
Yeah. Not like actual trolls, but, like, he just goes on internet boards, like, you guys are pieces of shit, and this type of deal. And at one point, he does it for this game called Schism, which is essentially, like, a Running Man type game where it's, like, people hunting each other for real and killing each other for real. And so he goes onto the chat and starts trolling the fuck out of everybody. And to the point where, like, the main dude who runs it breaks into his house and bolts guns to his hands.
What?
Like, literally bolts them together. Okay. And he's like, all right, you're in the game now. So you got to hunt our best player, who's Nyx, played by Samara Weaving. He's like, you guys got to fight each other to the death. And whoever wins, I'll let them go.
Okay.
Yeah. I'll tell you right now, if you've seen Gamer, it's very similar to Gamer. It's in your face as fuck. It's over. It's super stylized. It's super crude. It tries way too hard. That being said, I didn't hate it.
Okay. Well, so that's that's what I'm curious, because I've seen other films with this kind of premise, like even like the really tacky kind of cheap films like Nerve or something like that, where they're like, oh, the game is real and you have to be in the real moment to do this kind of stuff. But
yeah, where like the editing is in your face all over the place. The thing is, the reason I don't hate it as much is mainly because of Daniel Radcliffe, because he fully commits himself to this stupid-ass shit that's going on.
That seems to be his thing. Like, he's a professional about this stuff. Like, even, like, Swiss Army Man, where he's playing a corpse. It's like, yeah, not, like he played it to the hilt with that one, so...
You legitimately like him. You're like, I have no reason to like you, but I like you. and I'll say that the comedy is not good. Because, like, there's a lot of comedy, like, based on, like, hey, you can't really use your hands other than for shooting things. So, like, one point he tries to go to the bathroom. Or trying to put on pants or trying to eat food, and it just doesn't work. And it's just like really shitty gags that are really obvious and really lame.
Nah.
But there's one point where he goes into an alley and then he runs up into this hobo who's like, he's played by that one dude who's in Jumanji who tells the rules of Jumanji.
Reese Darby. Reese Darby.
Yeah, the one who's in the second one and then the new one's coming up, but that dude.
Yeah.
And he has a whole thing. It's like, hey, yeah, you think just because I'm homeless, I'm here, I'm not smart or anything. It's like, no, I'm not smart. I just smoke crack. And here's this hot dog for you to eat that's been here for like 8 months. I'm like, all right, I guess. And I love Samara Weaving. I still think she's great in this. But her writing, whoever wrote her dialogue, was like a 13-year-old boy who speaks in like message boards.
Oh,
every single thing she says is like the most edgelord type shit. And I love her that she managed to work around it. But at the same time, I was like, this is fine. I still love her, and her action stuff is really cool. But just, yeah. It's like, you know exactly what kind of movie this is coming in, and it does not stray from that. You know you're going to hate this or love this from the get-go.
Yeah, I feel like I know exactly what movie it is just from you talking about it. Yeah.
Yeah. But again, I was never bored, and there's parts where the style did get to me. Like, the opening scene with Nyx, where she's shooting the fuck out of a bunch of people, is badass. When Daniel Radcliffe finally learns to, like, actually shoot people, it's great. But yeah, it's fine.
Yeah. No, it's interesting, because the guy who directs this movie is, I think his name is Jason Lee Howden, who, his main trade is that he's a visual effects artist, for the most part. So
makes sense.
Yep, because he did a bunch of stuff for Legion, he did stuff for Planet of the Apes, he did a bunch of stuff for Avengers. And mostly he does stuff like compositing work and digital effects composition, so...
I'll say, some of the effects look really cheap.
Yeah.
Because it's very clear that they shot this in, like, overseas.
Well, yeah, because it was shot in United States and in New Zealand, so...
Yeah, New Zealand. That's what it felt like. I was like, this feels like a movie that y'all shot in New Zealand.
Yeah, and the last one this guy made, because he actually directed another film, was Deathgasm, that film, if you ever heard of that
one. Which I've never seen.
Yeah, not me either. So...
But, yeah, again, you know exactly what you're coming for. Like, you know whether you're going to like or hate this from the outset. It's enjoyable enough. I found it enjoyable enough. And, again, yeah, the two leads, they were fine. The villain was just... a bunch of whatever, like a bunch of shitty tattoos on his face.
Well, then, so I guess what's your final rating for that one, then?
I'll give it 7. I'll give it 7 live streams out of 10.
Okay. Well, so now this one, I know you definitely were a humongous fan of Knives Out, right?
Oh, yes. Knives Out, the Rian Johnson whodunit, is fan-fucking-tastic. And I know I keep using that word too much, but it's so good.
Yeah.
It really is.
It's interesting because, I mean, I know we've talked about this where I was not the biggest fan of Last Jedi, but I'm not against Rian Johnson as a filmmaker per se because I think he's done some... Even if I don't love all his movies, I think I've liked quite a bit of his stuff. Like, even Looper, you know, for the previous one he did. I thought it was a good movie. I had some issues with some of the effect work and that stuff throughout it. But I think, on the whole, he's a guy who maybe thinks he's a little too clever of himself, but he can't actually do really clever stuff with the way he writes and directs movies.
This movie is so just hilariously clever. Like, it's one of the funniest movies I've seen this year. And, yeah, for the people who don't know, it's a whodunit. This big mystery novelist who has like this huge empire, the patriarch of this family, dies suddenly, and Daniel Craig's character is a private investigator who's here and suspects someone in the family might have caused it. And it's a huge cast of characters. All of them are hilarious.
Yeah, I mean, like freaking, it's got like Chris Evans, Jamie Lee Curtis, Michael Shannon, Don Johnson, Toni Collette, Lakeith Stanfield, Catherine Langford, Ana de Armas. The list just goes on and on for this cast. Frank Oz has an appearance somewhere in this, apparently.
Yeah, he has a very brief role.
And that's awesome.
That's like the dude who like delivers the will to the family. But this movie is a whodunit in the very natural sense of the word. Like, you're just so invested into this mystery, and you're trying to follow along. And honestly, I thought I had figured it out like way before until it shows. No, you didn't. What you thought this was didn't actually happen.
Well, that is interesting because, he basically said, Rian Johnson said that this was based on Agatha Christie plays and books. And
it's very, very apparent, yeah.
Okay, yeah, because this sounds like just the plot of Mousetrap, more or less.
Okay, I don't know Mousetrap. I'm not familiar with Mousetrap, but I can go with that.
Yeah, it's similar.
Daniel Craig has this weird southern accent that he plays that's honestly, I thought I would hate, but it's so fucking funny. Especially points where you find out he's kind of an idiot also, but not really.
So he's basically his character from Logan Lucky then, right?
Yes.
Okay.
the whole family, like I mentioned, just a couple of highlights. Toni Collette as Joni, who's like kind of like a lifestyle guru, who's so airheaded but also weirdly cunning. She's great. My favorite character personally was Don Johnson as like the son-in-law who's Toni Collette's husband. He's a piece of shit. And they put on, like, but he's so smarmy and has like a smile on his face the whole time. I'm like, you know what? If you weren't a piece of shit Trump supporter, I should mention this movie's very overtly political.
You don't say.
Yeah, I mentioned about Parasite being about like class and entitlement. This one especially is about entitlement because this whole family is like, no, I'm entitled to this money or whatever rights that we have because they all live very affluent lifestyles.
Yep.
Toni Collette mentions she's a lifestyle guru. Michael Shannon handles like the publishing for all the books that Christopher Plummer's written. The only like person who has like the least to like win or lose is Marta, played by Ana de Armas, who's like the caretaker of Christopher Plummer. And I'll say with her character, she has a tick that Daniel Craig ends up using for the movie that is so funny. I don't even want to hint at it any more than that, but I'll just say she has a certain tick that happens with her that is, every time it happens, you're just like, oh, that's great. I love this.
Yeah, no, I've heard she's a standout from quite a few people, so.
She's probably the main standout. It's like her, Daniel Craig, and Chris Evans. Because Chris Evans, I haven't seen him play a full-on asshole in a long time. But he's such a good character, such a good actor, that he makes his asshole character have a lot of nuance to him.
Nice.
Because he's like the black sheep of the family, and he has a lot of like secrets in his own right with like Christopher, involving him and Christopher Plummer. And just the way this mystery unfolds, you're so hooked. And when they have the big aha moment, you're like, oh, that's fucking, I did not expect that. At the same time, I totally buy it.
Okay, nice. No, I've always been curious because these kind of movies can either be really, really good like this or just so obvious. It really depends on the writer and the director being more clever than the audience, because
it's very well written.
Okay, that's great. That's great.
I will say, if there's anyone I feel they didn't use enough, it's Jaden Martell, my boy from Book of Henry.
Oh, right.
Like, he's just barely there, but they have a gag with him that's really funny, because his whole thing is that he's essentially like a young Republican, but also an internet troll.
Okay. I know quite a few of those kind of people, so I'm sure I have reference.
Exactly.
Okay. So, I mean, it seems like a lot of people really like this movie. Do you think it has any chance of being an actual, like, serious awards contender this year, or is it just more like a, hey, this is cool to watch kind of thing?
I want to say it's more in the cool to watch rather than awards. Again, this is one of those things where if it gets nominated for anything, I would say it's mostly for the screenplay.
Okay. Nice. So then, just final ratings. What do you think this is worth?
9 knives out of 10.
Okay, straight to the point. point. Okay. I swear that was not intentionally a pun in that one. But
I'm sorry. I just completely forgot something that I want to mention.
Oh yeah.
Knives Out. Side note of the festival. Side note of the movies. But that thing I went to humble bragging you about. I went to the after party.
Oh, did you?
Yeah. A friend of mine, I won't name him, but, like, he managed to finagle me and, like, 3 other friends into the, like, after party of the screen of, like, Knives Out, where, like, the actual actors were there.
No so,
like,
way.
5 minutes after I walk in, I see Christopher Plummer just, like, hanging out and talking to people. And then I'm, like, walking around, like, drinking the open bar and shit. And then I turn around, I see Daniel Craig and Chris Evans right there. Chris Evans looks like he doesn't want to be there.
Not surprised, sadly.
No, because he doesn't seem like the type of dude who wants to do, like, the social party thing. He's, like, he seems more like a dude who just wants to hang out with his dogs type of deal.
Yeah, you know, actually, I've heard that a lot with some of the Marvel actors, because I met the daughter of Frank Marshall at a screening of one of the Bourne movies, and she said that Jeremy Renner is very similar, where he's a very shy dude and a very, like, not antisocial, but he doesn't like doing the social gatherings kind of thing.
Exactly.
So.
And that was another type of thing.
Okay.
But
okay.
But Toni Collette is so just, like, energetic and lively. Dude, I should have a platter of appetizers with her. I swear to you this happened. There were 3 other people. My friends were also there, and they had some, too. Where it was, like, the food that they had was incredible. They had I think it was, like, something, like, wrapped in bacon. It was some small appetizer thing. But, like, I had one, she grabbed one, and she looked at us like, yo, this is really good. And we're like, yeah, it is. And then I look at him like, did that just happen? did we just talk to Toni Collette?
That's great. That's awesome.
Dude, it is still the most surreal shit that's ever happened to me. That I'm like, I was at a Hollywood party with people. What the fuck?
No, that's quite amazing. I mean, it's funny, like, because that weird feeling of, like, being able to talk to celebrities, like, that, I don't know what it is. Like, they're not better than us, but we still feel so,
they're,
like,
they're people, but this, because they feel so, like, you're used to them seeing them in, like, larger-than-life scenarios.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
weird. Also, it didn't help that I felt so madly underdressed, because, like, it's a bunch of old, rich, white dudes, and, like, influencers and shit, and they're all dressed to the nines. I'm here in, like, jeans and sneakers and shit, because I wasn't planning on going. Oh. It just happened.
Yeah, no, I'm sure they expect that in this kind of situation, because not everyone there is to be, you know, for a party, essentially. Yeah. So, no, that's cool. No, I have to edit this into the previous section here, so.
Yeah, I just wanted to bring that up, but yeah, that happened, and I'm like, I need to talk about this, because this is the weirdest thing that's happened, but I can flex about it forever.
All right, so we realized this went on for a long time, but we just had so many fun stories to tell, so tune in for part 2, because Shaq's going to talk about Uncut Gems, Joker, Dolomite Is My Name, and so many more movies.